The following program will make you want to grow things and experience new and wonderful dreams about your plants, garden, and garden design. Listener participation is always strongly advised. Good evening and welcome to Down the Garden Path with your hosts, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing, right here on Reality Radio 101. To get on board, send us an email right now. Our email address is instudio101@gmail.com. Right to your hosts of Down the Garden Path, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing.
Thank you very much and welcome everyone to Down the Garden Path, another episode here where we discuss down-to-earth tips and advice for your plants, gardens, and landscapes. As landscape designers and gardeners, we think it is important and possible to have great gardens that are low maintenance, and we want to help you make it happen. I'm Joanne Shaw, landscape designer and owner of Down to Earth Landscape Design for the past 11 years. It is currently a design-only business here east of the GTA. With me is my co-host, Matthew Dressing. Welcome, Matthew.
Welcome, Joanne. Good evening, everyone. I am Matthew Dressing, horticulturist and landscape designer and owner of Natural Affinity Designs. Natural Affinity is a landscape design and garden maintenance firm servicing Toronto and the Eastern GTA. Joanne and I enjoy doing Down the Garden Path each week, bringing you interesting, relevant, and helpful topics to help you achieve a great garden. We learn right along with you, from each other, from our research, and from the guests that join us here on the show. And as always, we welcome your questions via social media and emails. So, it is early May.
It is early May.
It's finally warming up. Today was gorgeous.
Finally. Yesterday and today, we've had two consecutive days.
I know.
And so, we're really excited to talk about the hottest topic, you know, it seems to be these days, right?
Oh, it is.
One of the hottest topics and consistently growing topics and commodities in the gardening world is growing your own food. But knowing where to start can be a bit overwhelming. Joining us tonight is author, radio personality, and veggie guru, Nikki Jabour. Tonight, we're going to talk about growing veggies and take a look at her latest book, Veggie Garden Remix. And so Nikki's bio, I'll just read it and welcome her into the show shortly. So Nikki is award-winning author of The Year-Round Vegetable Gardener, Veggie Garden Remix, and Groundbreaking Food Gardens. She has won the American Horticultural Society Book Award twice and won a GardenCom Gold Award for her work on her radio show, The Weekend Gardener. Nikki writes widely for magazines and newspapers and speaks at events across North America. Welcome to the show, Nikki.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. And thanks for inviting me.
Oh, you're welcome. Well, we're excited. I know you're excited for spring.
Yes. So I think all Canadians at this point.
I know.
So excited for spring.
I know. What would we all talk about if we weren't complaining about the weather?
True. I know. And it doesn't matter where you live in Canada. We can all complain about the weather.
That's right. But you were saying before the show, before we went live, that spring has finally arrived in Atlantic Canada.
I think so. I'd like to say yes for sure. And I know it's gorgeous today, like 14, 15 degrees. It was like 30 in my polytunnel. But I know tonight there's a chance of frost, as there would be, I guess, this time of the year.
Right.
I'm starting to put things outside. But yeah, the weather looks sunny for the next couple of days. We had such a rainy April that I'm really embracing the sunny weather so far of May. So I think spring finally has arrived on the East Coast.
Excellent. Yeah, we're thinking the same. We have also had a very rainy April and been at May so far, too. I think we have rain coming. It was a nice day today and yesterday, but I think we have rain coming this evening. So yeah. I know. But at least
it's come our way then. If it's you now, it'll be us tomorrow, the next day.
Yeah, for sure. But at least it's warming up. So we want our listeners to know, if you have any questions for Nikki about vegetable gardening, your books, or just want to say hi, write to us at instudio101@gmail.com.
That's right. And tonight we have a copy of Nikki's book, Veggie Garden Remix. So for those of you who write in at instudio101@gmail.com, write in a question to Nikki and we will enter you into the draw, which will be at the end of the show, to win a copy of her book, Veggie Garden Remix. Right in now.
Yeah, yes. There you go.
I love giveaways. Who doesn't, right?
Especially I know. And it's hard for us to part with the book.
It's beautiful. It really is.
Yeah, amazing. It's a beautiful book.
Thanks so much. Yes. I appreciate that.
Yeah. So, well, why don't we start off by just telling you how you got into gardening. Why aren't you telling us how you got into gardening and what drew you towards vegetable gardening?
Yeah, I think like a lot of Canadians, especially a lot of gardeners, I started off, we had a family garden when I was a kid. And, I grew up in the city, so we had a cottage out in the country and we'd go there in the summer for 2 months. So we had this 2 month vegetable garden. It was usually planted like the long weekend in May. And by the time everything was harvested in late August, early September, it was done. And it was one of those old fashioned gardens where you had long rows with like lots of space between
each row.
The weeds grew like crazy, and it was my job to pull them, so it's really quite a miracle I still like to grow food. But I was a fussy eater as a kid, and I realized quickly how good the potatoes, the beans, everything from our garden tasted. Like even the carrots smell so good, so it kind of helped me become less fussy, and I just kind of never looked back. I took it over probably by the time I was like 12. And, and again, I obviously have never looked back. I now have 20 big raised beds in my backyard, plus a bunch of freeform beds, a polytunnel. So I kind of went a little crazy with the garden, I guess.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. So your mom was, what does your mom think of all that?
Well, I think she's really obviously happy.
Yes.
That I kind of took over the garden, first of all, back then. And I started to expand it with different things, even introducing, I remember one of the first things that really excited me was the fact that all the herbs my mother would cook with, like in the cupboard, I would see parsley and oregano and garlic. And, I knew they were plants, I guess, but I never really thought about it when I was a kid.
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized I could buy those and plant them in the garden and we could eat them fresh. And I think that was a big thing for all of us.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started collecting. There was a book by Canadian garden writer Patrick Lima, just herbs and the Illustrated Guide to Herbs. And I still have that book from an original printing way back probably in the late 80s. And I still love it. And it brings back such memories of my interest really taking off in gardening. And Canadian garden writer sparked that for me. And I just started growing all the herbs I could find.
Oh, wow. That is great. It is something because herbs are so quick. Like you're not even really waiting for like a fruit or a vegetable, right, to come out. Like you can use it right away.
Exactly.
Although
I did plant mint in one of her gardens and I don't think she's forgiven me for that.
Yeah. Yeah. We've all done that. Yes.
I didn't know when I was like 13 or 14 what mint would do.
Oh, Nikki, we know that adults don't know now.
So true.
Right.
Live and learn.
That's right. Live and learn. So that's great. So for our listeners who are wondering, do not plant mint in your garden. That's one of our top tips, right?
Yeah.
Put it in a container. And don't even think that putting the container in the ground will work because it jumps like it, hopscotch and, jump, yeah.
So
right?
True.
That's it.
Yeah.
She'll take over.
And I love all the different kinds of mint. I remember I talked to Emma Biggs last year, who's a 13-year-old garden writer from Toronto. And she told me she planted a mint garden in a giant old pot. And she planted, because there's so many great types now when you go to the garden center. It's like chocolate mint and, peppermint and Kentucky mint. And so she planted like 8 or 9 types in this big container. And then she could have her mint garden safely, but still enjoy all those different types of mint.
Yeah.
And by the way, Nikki, Emma's on the air here. She has a radio show.
Yes.
The Garage Gardeners.
Yes,
right.
Yeah. So we're
big fans of she and her dad, Stephen, as well.
Yeah. So they have a show, monthly show, right, Gary?
Yeah. I believe it is.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, so that's great. And we talked about them last week, I think, too.
Oh.
So that's good. Yeah, so no, it's great.
She's heard a book out this, just the past couple, I think, month or two now.
Yes.
I think she's in the news pretty much coast to coast.
Yeah, she is. And it's exciting that she's sparking a new generation. because I know everybody is interested. I know as a landscape designer, I'm pretty much designing ornamental gardens and ornamental landscapes, but now virtually every customer is asking about vegetables. You know, where can I put them? Is it, you know, that type of thing? And they want to do it for their kids. So I think it's really is, like we said at the head of the show there, it's a really growing industry.
And you must also get asked a lot about berry plants and like using high bush blueberries or hascaps or, you know, other fruiting plants within a landscape itself too.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely. Awesome. So it's exciting. So your new book, The Veggie Garden Remix, is a little bit kind of an eclectic mix of veggies. So what inspired you to do that?
Well, I know we talked about my mother, and this one actually was inspired by my mother-in-law.
Excellent.
And she is this delightful woman who came from a little village in the mountains outside Beirut in Lebanon. And, you know, she was probably in our garden maybe, so they live here in Nova Scotia.
Okay.
She was in our garden probably like 10 years ago now, and, you know, came up in late July, just as some of the vegetables were really starting to get crazy, like the tomatoes, the cucumbers, the zucchini. So she came up to pick a few things, because we have, again, a big garden, and I think the whole family shops here. And so as she was picking some of these, she looked up, and she saw this trellis I had that was covered in snake gourds. And I always grew these because my kids love them. They're just cool. They can grow 4 or 5 feet long, and we dry them for crafts. I take them, you know, to the schools to show the different kids the different fun gourds we grow. And she told me that she knew this is an edible vegetable called cucuza. And I was like, it's just a snake gourd, right?
But yes.
At that point, they were only about a foot long. They were just still quite immature. So she picked some. She cooked up this amazing meal for us. You know, and I realized, okay, well, my snake gourds are edible. So what else could I grow for her that she might recognize as a Middle Eastern vegetable that she might have grown up with or flavors that she can't get here? And I kind of fell down the rabbit hole of you know, Lebanese vegetables, and we started growing so many different ones. And then, of course, that led me, like gardening is a gateway drug, it led me into Japanese cuisine and vegetables and Indian vegetables and, you know, some from South America and Central America. And I started growing all these global vegetables, and I just really wanted to write about it and share those experiences with everybody.
That's great. I love that gardening is a gateway drug. I love
that. A little
dangerous
for some of us.
Oh, for sure, right?
Even now I'm going to garden centers every weekend, and it's still not really spring yet, you know what I mean? It's just started, but I'm buying more plants than I need because I grow most of my own, but I see them, and I must have them.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, I literally try not to go because of that, right?
You're probably smart, but I just can't resist the lure of the garden center.
Oh, that's good. So when we talk about the veggies that you're, you know, these more unusual varieties, are they mostly, because what zone are you in Nova Scotia?
I'm zone 5B.
Okay, which is the same. You know, we had a listener last week who was from where was she from?
New Brunswick.
Yeah, she was 5B. And we're here, you know, east of the GTA in Ontario, and we're also 5B.
Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, it's all pretty similar. Let's be honest, our summers the past couple of years, you know, we used to have a couple days above 30 in the summer, you know, get that heat wave.
Yeah.
Last summer, I think there were 40 days above 30. So, I mean, times are changing. But even so, I mean, all the vegetables I started to experiment with, I mean, you know, some of them didn't thrive here. Some of the really heat-loving melons and some of the Thai-type peppers. But pretty much everything I tried to grow did really well. And I realized, you know, growing up with a garden, I always stuck to their traditional crops and your traditional varieties. And so experimenting, you know, the past decade plus with all these really cool, unusual vegetables and varieties just introduced me to so many new flavors. And, I mean, I feel like we grow this global rainbow garden. And it's so much fun because everybody comes to the garden and they want to see cucamelons. They want to see gherkins. They want to see the black tomatoes. You know, they want to see all the cool stuff because that's what really piques the interest. And it doesn't matter if you're 5 years old or, you know, 90. That's what we all want to see.
Yeah, that is cool. And that is true because I think somebody who may have grown up with a traditional garden that are like, but, you know, that's another way to kind of step up the game and make it more exciting and more challenge, you know, adding a bit more challenge to it.
True. And I think a lot of the seed companies, I mean, everybody from Richter Seeds to Annapolis Seeds here on the East Coast to a lot of these seed companies have added these vegetables and the varieties. So, you know, whereas 10 or 15, 20 years ago, you couldn't find these cool crops.
Right.
Now they're everywhere and everybody can find them quite easily.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. So we do have a couple of questions. Oh, Olga has written in and she says she's a big fan of Nikki's and she just wanted to say hello.
Thank you, Olga. Hello to you, too. I wish you a happy gardening season.
Yes.
Mason also writes in, besides growing mint in containers, what about veggies and or fruits other veggies and fruits in containers.
Oh,
doesn't have much of a yard, Mason says.
Yeah, and I mean, small space gardening is huge. Mm-hmm. Pretty much, I think I've grown every type of vegetable in a container, honestly, from corn in Rubbermaid containers to different types of tomatoes. And of course, as you guys know, plant breeders now are putting a lot of time and effort into creating varieties that are more compact.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can get really nice bush cucumbers or bush zucchinis or bush tomatoes that do really well in containers. So I would do a little research before you go to the garden center, and then while you're there, you know, use your phone, you know, when you look at varieties. Will this tomato really be good for a container? And look for words like bush or dwarf or compact
okay.
on the plant tag, or ask help at the garden center. They'll tell you for sure, but there are so many you can grow in containers.
Excellent, excellent. That's a great tip, to read the tags, and to, now that we have our phones, we've got, you know, the internet right at our fingertips.
Yeah. Exactly. I mean, what did we do 20, 30 years ago?
I don't know. I don't know what we did.
Right?
Yeah.
Let's not think about it.
No, really. I know. We couldn't, yeah, we couldn't even phone a friend. We'd have to find a payphone. I don't know.
Exactly.
So Mason, yeah, so definitely think about that. Look for bush or compact and dwarf varieties of vegetables, and they will all be suitable for your containers. Tip is not like less is more too, don't you find that? Like sometimes, because I've done that where I put like the whole cell pack in the pot then.
That is true. And you know, a bigger is better as well when it comes to containers, because the larger volume of soil you have,
mm-hmm.
the less frequently you'll need to water it, because
yes.
it'll hold water better. And when I do plant out my containers, it's 2/3 potting mix in 1/3 compost. And I mix that in my containers with a little bit of slow-release organic fertilizer.
Okay.
And then I know my plants are pretty much set for the whole season. But the bigger containers mean you just don't have to water as often, which is really good for people that are busy.
Right, right, for sure. And those hot, hot days, like you said, right?
Yeah.
I mean, because then you're, if it's the pot is too small, you're literally watering it twice a day.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't want to be watering twice
yeah.
a day.
No.
And for some vegetables, like tomatoes, if you have tomatoes in smaller pots and they wilt, every time your tomato wilts, you're increasing your chance of getting like a disease like blossom end rot, which is what causes those large kind of leathery patches in the bottom of your tomato. So you don't want that. So
right.
you want to stay on top of watering in a container. The bigger it is, you know, the less you'll have to get out that water hose.
Yes, yeah. And they will get bigger than you think, because
yeah.
I know that's why I said. So, you know, it might look odd at the beginning of just planting one plant in that big pot, but
yes.
it will grow.
So true. Very good tip.
Yes, yes.
And I do often include, even in containers, I mean, I know I include a lot of flowers in my vegetable garden, my raised bed garden, but even in containers, if I'm putting a tomato, I will stick some lemon gem marigolds in the pot too, or a nasturtium, you know,
okay.
a mounding type of nasturtium, or even, you know, just some sweet alyssum, just to add a bit of flowers, which will bring in more pollinators even to your container garden. And
oh.
plus, it looks great.
Yeah.
So you can certainly include a few flowers in your vegetable pot
yeah.
too.
That is a great idea, adding the nasturtiums,
yeah.
you know, bringing in the pollinators, thinking about it that way.
Yeah.
And nasturtium.
Or beneficial insects like hoverflies and,
mm-hmm.
you know, ladybugs, all those good guys.
Mm-hmm. And nasturtiums are edible as well.
True.
Right?
Yeah, seeds, leaves, and flowers.
Oh, okay.
You can pickle the seeds like you would capers and have your
Ooh.
Own homemade quote-unquote capers.
Oh, I
That's
did not
cool.
know that.
I love
and
nasturtiums.
You know what? And I've never grown them.
Nasturtium?
Yeah, I never
oh, okay.
have.
This
I know.
Is a horticultural emergency.
I
yeah.
know. I know. My
okay.
mother-in-law, who's probably listening, who's the one who got me into gardening, she has grown them. I was one of her favorites. Yeah, I can remember her like picking them and eating them. But I don't know. I just have never. So yeah.
Well, my problem is I grow too many types because you know I love all the traditional orangey yellow ones,
mm-hmm.
but now there's some that are almost pure white, some that are so dark burgundy they're almost black, and then there's a whole bunch of new ones like Bloody Mary that have these crazy splotches on them, or orchid flame. So there's all these new varieties to grow, and so I probably have 12 different nasturtiums I grow every year, and you don't need that many.
Right.
There's just so many beautiful ones out there.
Okay, well then, that's definitely on my list.
Well, I'm growing the Phoenix variety this year. So
that, you know, that I grow that at my tunnels. It is the most beautiful nasturtium you could grow.
Oh, I can't wait. It's the first year I'm going to grow it, so I'll share some with you, Julie.
Okay.
I have a few extra ones.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
yeah,
good.
They are beautiful. And they're a climber, and I
yeah.
couldn't say enough good things about them.
Ooh, okay.
Cool.
Well,
I'm doing
good.
It in a container. I've got a fancy little trellis I'm going to make for it to climb up and make it look neat. So.
Yes. Yeah, Matthew's
sure.
our balcony gardener, so
yeah.
he makes use grid reuse of his containers and his balcony, right?
Oh,
yep.
That's perfect. Amazing. Yeah. No, they are just, you're going to love them. They're gorgeous and edible, of course. The flowers
yeah.
are a little bit smaller, but they've got serrated petals.
Yeah.
So they're just very unique in terms of nasturtiums.
Very cool. Oh, yeah, I can't wait to do them.
Oh, it's so that's exciting. Great. Okay.
He's even more excited.
Yeah, he's getting very excited.
Awesome.
So do you have some recommendation? Well, I've got I have so many questions for you. So some recommendations for start off with our beginner gardeners, the easiest ones.
The easiest vegetables to grow?
Yes.
I mean, in terms of easy vegetables, I would think, these aren't super unusual ones, but like bush beans, mm-hmm. are very easy to grow. Peas. Cherry tomatoes, zucchini, those are all easy to grow. If you're looking for something a little different, you could maybe stick with a vegetable that's easy to grow, but try some different varieties.
Okay.
You know, maybe some of the rainbow carrots, or, you know, in terms of the cherry tomatoes, maybe black cherry or snow white cherry tomatoes, you know. There's a lot of different varieties that you can kind of start with, or even cucumbers. I mean, they are so easy to grow. You know, start with bush-type cucumbers that don't have long, long vines. They stay more compact, and you could just grow them up a simple tomato cage. And then try some of the, like the white-fruited types or the yellow-fruited types of cucumbers, because they're really unusual, but they're delicious and so much fun in a garden, especially if you've got kids around.
Right, for sure. Now, are these plants really, you have to start them from seed, or are your garden centers more and more readily available, like the more unusual varieties, are they more readily available?
Both, yes to both of those.
Okay.
Because I do find you're finding, like some of our local garden centers here in Nova Scotia, a few of them call me actually like in January and say, tell me like 4 or 5 cool things I should grow this year, you know, which is nice because, you know, now most of the garden centers in Nova Scotia carry cucamelon transplants.
Woo, that's great.
Right? And you can find them pretty much everywhere. A lot of them carry like lemon cucumbers. They carry my favorite sun gold tomatoes. They carry some really unusual things like that you normally wouldn't find, mm-hmm. which I think is fantastic. But a lot of these you can either start yourself by direct seeding in the garden, like the carrots, the bush beans,
okay.
and some things you'll need to start indoors, like the tomatoes. And we're a little late now for starting
yes.
tomatoes, but you'll
yeah.
find some beautiful varieties at your garden centers. But it's not too late to start cucamelons. If you wanted to grow those this year, I would get a pot as soon as possible, plant up some seeds, and then move them in the garden once the whole risk of frost has passed. I mean, even the longer you wait, they really like heat, so it
right.
doesn't matter if you wait, you know, a few extra weeks into mid or even late June.
Mm-hmm.
They will take off once that temperature gets warm, and they'll just go crazy in your garden.
Okay. And I have noticed that growers here, garden centers, are starting to sell cucamelons.
Yes, that's
yeah.
exciting.
Yep. Yeah, so that is exciting. We did try those a couple years ago, and we didn't have a lot of luck, but I would like to try them again. So
yeah, you definitely want to give them a nice sunny spot.
Okay.
You know, and I do work some organic matter into my soil beforehand. Every Mother's Day, my husband gets me a truckload of manure. It's the most romantic gift you could give a girl, really.
That's right. Absolutely.
So I work some of that in. And then, you know, I do wait. Like, normally I plant things, you know, after the last frost. And if we get cool weather, I'll keep row covers handy. But I do give the cucamelons an extra week or two because they really like it warm. So the biggest mistake people make is planting them out too early.
Mm.
And we all want to do that. We all want to rush it into the garden. But waiting for cucamelons does pay off, for sure.
Okay. That's good to know.
Yeah.
Good tip. Yeah, because I'm going to grow some up at my sister's in Belleville, so looking forward to that.
Oh, that's good.
So if you guys are just tuning in, we are talking this evening with Nikki Jabor. We're talking about her latest book, The Veggie Garden Remix. Just so you guys know, too, we have a copy of the book we are going to give away. So write us here at instudio101@gmail.com. Ask Nikki a question, and that'll get you entered into the draw for the book.
That's right.
Speaking of which, Ralph writes in with a question. He says, help. I've never had good luck with pumpkins. What am I doing wrong? Any tips?
That is a good question. Well, pumpkins are generally considered one of those relatively easy to grow crops. So the reason you might not be getting pumpkins is, could be a couple things. Could be, I mean, assuming the vines are growing really well and you're getting lots of beautiful, vigorous growth, chances are maybe your flowers are not getting pollinated.
Ooh.
Because they do need to be pollinated by bees.
Mm-hmm.
You know, other little creatures will do it as well, but generally bees do it. So for my pumpkins and related vegetables, like gourds, like my cucumbers, like my cucumber melons, so some of those in the same family, like I go up to my garden a lot, obviously. I want to sit there. I want to enjoy it. I take a cup of tea. And while I'm up there, if I notice some of these pumpkins or gourds or cucumbers open, new flowers, I'll just hand pollinate them while I'm there.
Ah.
It just pays off. Mm-hmm. It probably doubles my yield without me adding any more plants. So I will look for a boy flower of a pumpkin, and you can kind of tell because under the flower, it's just a straight stem. And the girl flower under the flower has an immature fruit. Usually for pumpkins, it would be round. So you can kind of tell which are boys and girls. And you pop off the boy flower, remove the petals, and just go to town on your pollination. put a point to it.
Yes, for sure. Wow, we have a lesson in birds and bees here today.
Right, but you know, it makes a big difference.
The following program may contain adult language and mature.
I should have warned you in advance.
No, that's okay.
But yeah, it's the best way to boost your yield. So probably inadequate pollination is what's happening. If your vines aren't growing well, if the plants just don't do anything after you put them in the ground, well, then you're going to have to, maybe I would suggest a soil test. Mm. Looking at your soil, is it infertile? Is it too acidic? Is it too basic? Or what are the issues with your actual soil itself?
Okay, some good tips there for Ralph. Excellent, excellent.
And I should say, Joanne, I just tweeted you a picture of my Phoenix nasturtiums from last year, if you could show Matthew later.
Okay. Excellent.
Can't wait.
Take a peek at those babies, yes. Because you're going to love them.
Yes. I thought you would make me feel guilty for never having grown them before.
I'm not, but maybe that's partly my intent. No.
No, it's okay.
But now you're going to this year.
That's right. I absolutely am.
Perfect.
So that is good. So we do have another question from Riley. Riley's asking, what are good number for a generic fertilizer to put on my veggies and fruits? There are so many out there that they're confused.
Yes, that is a good question. So assuming he probably wants an organic granular fertilizer, something to put on in the spring that he would then kind of, every time you water, a little bit gets released sort of thing.
Right.
So the one I have been using is a ProMix product, a granular organic fertilizer, and it's 448.
Okay.
Generally, you'll see there's always three numbers in the front of your fertilizer packages.
Mm-hmm.
Organic ones are slower to release, and they're made of natural products. I don't use any synthetic fertilizers. I'm an organic gardener, so no synthetic fertilizers in my garden. They give plants a quick rush of nutrients, but I like to give them a slow and steady feed.
Mm-hmm.
Plus, organic fertilizers, they don't build up soluble salts in the soil, and they actually do build your soil up. So they do help the whole soil food web. So I do use organic ones, and 448 is generally what I use. Your nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, and that is a nice analysis number. But some of them are more like, 3, 6, 2. Or
right.
There's so many different products out there, and I know Gaia Green is available in a lot of garden centers across Canada. That's also an excellent product. So just take a look in your garden center. I would generally, again, recommend sticking to an organic, and you'll find lots of options. And then during the growing season, at least once a month, I have a liquid kelp.
Okay.
Kelp emulsion, and I spray that on my tomatoes, for example. And if you spray it as like a foliar spray, I tell you, they start to grow within 2 days. They start to get bigger, and you can almost watch them grow. They just love that. It's full of micronutrients and plant hormones, and it's just really great for your plants. So you could always supplement with a liquid kelp or even a liquid fish emulsion, just to give them a mid-season feed. So, but a granular organic at the beginning of the season is a great idea.
Excellent, excellent. And we do recommend organic for everything here as well, our lawns. Just the overall health of the plant and the health of our soils.
Yeah.
Just the lasting benefits of that is definitely worth it. So
it makes your garden less maintenance. Because, again, your soil's healthier, and therefore your plants are healthier, and therefore they're not as susceptible to insect and disease pests. In my experience in my own garden,
mm-hmm.
since I started going completely organic, which has been about 20 years now, which I cut out synthetic fertilizers, and I use all those flowers to attract beneficial insects, and I create habitat for some of these good creatures. I mean, the work in my garden has gone down significantly.
Excellent. Yeah, well, that's what we talk about here too, right? Low maintenance gardening as much as possible. And that is possible with growing your own food.
Yeah. I mean, I have 20 raised beds plus extras plus a polytunnel. And really, during the growing season, I spend less than an hour a week.
Wow.
Working in the garden. But I mean, after I plant my tomatoes, for example, I mulch the beds with straw, a couple inches of straw. That helps prevent soil-borne diseases like tomato blight, early tomato blight. But it also holds water in, so I don't have to water very much.
Mm-hmm.
So I do find mulching makes a big difference, and it also prevents weed growth. So
yeah.
Mulching your vegetables is an easy way to reduce maintenance in the food garden.
Excellent. Now, do you have any irrigation at all?
No, just me.
Just you?
Just me and a hose, honestly. And I mean, I have 20 raised beds, and I mean, I think it would be really expensive to put an irrigation system in.
Yes.
I am thinking of running a few soaker hoses in my polytunnel,
mm-hmm.
For my summer crops of tomatoes and cucumbers and things like that. But we'll see how it goes. Mm-hmm. For now, I'm still relying on myself.
On yourself, right? And obviously not taking a three-week vacation in the middle of August.
I know. It's a bit of a worry because, you do have to water almost every day pretty much. And I do have roll-up sides, so I have great ventilation, which is fantastic. But, yeah, and it's... watering is an art, as you guys know.
Yeah.
So, I mean, just to get like a neighbor kid to come and water for me, which I've done before, doesn't work as well as you think.
Yes.
You know? So
yes.
You have to know how deeply to water, how long to water. Don't water the leaves if you can help it. All these little things.
Yes, for sure. For sure. You have to train them, you know, train them young, but.
Exactly. And my kids were not well trained. I'm sorry.
Yeah.
I just screwed that up completely.
And it's just one more thing we're asking them to do, right?
Yeah,
so, you know
true.
What I mean? Like, yeah. It doesn't work.
My son moves manure, but he's not going to be out there watering for me.
Oh, well, hey, if you can get him to move the manure, then that's his Mother's Day gift, right?
Exactly. It's the best gift you could ask for.
That's right. So you mentioned some good ones to grow. So is there anything that may be not easy to grow, but worth growing that you think that everybody should try? I know we talked about cucamelons, but is there something else that you think our listeners should look for?
I mean, there's a lot of great greens. Like, I am such a fan of salad greens. And I think if people eat a lot of salads in their day-to-day lives, this is where they can save money.
Oh,
you know?
Yes.
Because growing your own greens, a lot of things from leaf lettuce to arugula to spinach, they're super fast to grow. They're relatively easy to grow. They don't have a lot of pest problems and disease problems. I mean, you have to look out for slugs and flea beetles, but generally speaking, they're easy to grow in garden beds and containers. And there's a lot of different ones. So, like, certain ones like Tokyo Bikana is an Asian green, and it's a bit unusual, but it's really quite, it's not that difficult to grow, but, you know, and more seed companies are carrying it now, but some of these are really good. And they're replacing, like, lettuce in my salads. So I would definitely try some of those. One that maybe is a little more difficult to grow, or certain ones that are more difficult to grow, I would think, like, eggplants and peppers are slightly more difficult than tomatoes, for example. They really need the heat. You know, they don't grow quite as quickly. So you do have to make sure you either mulch or watch out for weeds underneath them. And you want to harvest at the right time. So those are some ones that I think a lot of people are a little shy about, especially when you're trying unusual varieties.
Right.
And then things like burr gherkins, Jamaican burr gherkins, they're called West African burr gherkins. But this is such a good one, and it's just a funny little crop. You know, the first year I grew it totally failed on me. I thought, okay, I don't have a good enough climate. But I tried it again the next year because I had more seed, and it went 25 feet in, like, every direction.
Wow.
And hundreds of these fruits. So it started off as a hard one for me, but I realized I just not watered the seedlings enough, or, you know, just something went wrong, and
mm-hmm.
I tried it again. And it's got these funny, bumpy little fruits that you pick when they're the size of, like, a chicken egg. And they taste kind of like a cucumber, but they're so good. They're never bitter. And the plants are not bothered by cucumber beetles.
Okay.
Like a magic plant. So that's a fun one to grow, especially, again, if you have kids. Just something different to engage them in the garden, you know, and maybe they'll eat them.
Right, right. So what were they called again?
Burr gherkins.
Okay.
B-U-R-R, burr gherkins.
Burr
really
gherkins.
Easy to grow, and I've been growing them ever since. So, and actually, I seeded mine about 3 days ago, and I noticed this morning they popped up in their little seed trays under the grow lights.
Oh, my goodness. Nice. That is great. Now, do you think you could direct sow those into the garden?
I have tried that, and you will get a crop usually by early September. But, you know, again, short season garden.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I start them indoors and give them, like, that head start inside, I certainly, you know, then the crop starts in late July.
Oh, okay.
So it gives me an extra 6 weeks. So
yeah.
I definitely, it's one of those I would definitely start indoors.
Okay. That is a good one.
So good. Okay. And I mean, that's another thing. I do use my grow lights, like, all summer long to produce what I like to call plug-in plants for succession planting. So when my first peas or the early greens are out of my garden beds, then I'll put bush beans in, you know, and then when the bush beans come out, maybe I'll sow beets for fall or, you know, but you can use your grow lights to start more broccoli seedlings, more cabbage seedlings, you know, more cucumber seedlings, just to keep plugging into your gardens throughout the growing season.
That's interesting because I think, yeah, a lot of people think of the grow lights as something you do and, you know, you don't get dust them off for January, February, March,
exactly.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, but if you want for, like, as you probably know, I do winter gardening as well. I harvest all winter long here from unheated structures in cold frames and mini hoop tunnels and stuff. So if I don't, like, and most things, like, are planted in midsummer. So, you know, my garden center is not going to have fresh seedlings of broccoli August 1st
mm-hmm.
or kale or cabbage. So
right.
if I want those to go in my garden for a November harvest, I have to grow them myself.
Yeah.
So having grow lights, you know, definitely helps me to extend my season with healthy seedlings.
Excellent, excellent. And that growing all through the winter is a whole other show, Nikki. So I hope we can have you back for that one because I think we have a lot of listeners who want to learn how to do that more. And you can even have just a small... oh my gosh, the went right out of my head.
Cold frame?
Thank you. I'm like, poof, it was gone, right? You can just have a small cold frame and just keep, you know, just keep a few crops all winter, right?
Absolutely. I mean, there's over 30 crops we harvest all winter long here.
Oh, my goodness.
Wow.
And again, I am not a gardener who's like, you know, I'm not a fussing gardener. I'm not a helicopter parent to my veggie babies. You know, it's pretty tough love in this house.
Ah.
So it's really quite easy to do.
Excellent, excellent. Well, that sounds good.
Yeah.
So, Nikki, we have Stan writing in. He says, hello. Here is the ultimate question. He has very little sun in his yard. Mm-hmm. What vegetables or fruit can he possibly grow that require very little sun? Obviously, the heat is there, but very little direct sunlight.
That's super common. People ask that a lot, actually, mm-hmm. and it's tough. But there are things you can grow. So if you have, like, half day of sun, you could still grow things like beets, and parsley and some greens, and even carrots will do okay. And in a half day of sun, bush beans would do okay. Generally, when you don't have a lot of sun, you avoid things that fruit, cucumbers, tomatoes, peppers, because they need a lot of energy in order to produce those fruits, so you kind of forget about those. In a half day of sun, I would still try cherry tomatoes. You won't get as good a crop as you would in full sun, but you're still going to get maybe 50%, and for me, that's worth the investment.
Yeah, for sure.
Tomatoes. Now, for more, like we're just talking a couple hours of sunlight, not much at all, I would just think green. Kale, you know, some of these Asian greens like Tokyo Bikana, spinach, arugula, leaf lettuce, you know, things like that. The leafy crops, parsley, cilantro, chives, even rhubarb, for goodness sake. So those will still grow in shady conditions, not as quickly as they would in sun. But, you know, for some things, in the middle of summer when it's hot and the soil's drier, a lot of my greens I do grow in shade. I'll put shade cloth above the garden bed on hoops
okay.
so that I can provide some shade and extend the season. So sometimes shade works in your favor.
Excellent, excellent. Well, there you go, Stan. There's some good options for you. Yeah, really good question. Thank you.
Fantastic. Yeah, that's, yeah, a lot you can do still, mm-hmm. for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, you don't have to be, you know, you don't have to think you're limited. Take your conditions and then just choose the right plant. It's sort of like when, you know, people always ask me, I have a lot of shade. I want to grow roses.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You might want to rethink the roses.
Right.
You know, because you're going to be fighting to keep them healthy your mm-hmm. whole, their whole life. And that's mm-hmm. just not going to make you happy. You know, right plant, right place.
Yes, exactly. That's low maintenance. I think that's what it comes down to. With regardless whether it's your ornamental garden or your veggie garden, it's planting the right plant in the right spot, and then it takes care of itself, right?
Yep. Yeah, it's just a little planning, and then even though you might not be able to grow what you want to grow, there are so many awesome plants out there, you'll still find something to
that's
love.
Right, that's right. So Matthew's found a few in your book that he's just dying to ask you about. We're really curious about this one, too, so go for it, Matthew.
I'm leafing through, and I stopped immediately when I was reading it. And am I pronouncing it correctly? Hostens?
Oh, Hostens, yes, the Hostens.
Yes.
I get a lot of people ask me about the Hostens, especially this time of the year, because
yeah.
they're emerging from everybody's garden in Canada.
Yeah,
that's it.
Have you never tried your Hostens?
I had no clue that this was a thing.
And that we could eat our hostas.
You can. So Hostens are those sharp, pointy shoots of your hosta plants that emerge in early spring.
Right.
And so every year we have a couple feeds of them as our hostas come up. You know, they're really good.
So,
you know, you can pan fry them in a little bit of butter, olive oil, a little bit of salt. Keep it simple. They turn bright green as they cook, sort of like asparagus.
Okay.
And they taste like spring. They taste fresh and they're delicious. And they're just a nice, healthful side dish. In the markets of China, you can buy bundled hosta leaves or an early spring hostens, because this is an actual vegetable in parts of Asia. For some reason, we have just forgotten about it.
Wow. So, you've like blown his mind.
Yeah. My job is done then.
There you go.
So does any hosta, like do all the hostas, is there a certain variety and species
usually,
that we
yeah,
need to?
Usually it's the species Hosta Montana.
Okay.
Which is the more very common hosta, but that would be the one that is generally eaten as a vegetable crop.
And is there a few cultivars or varieties that we can find in garden centers? Because a lot of them are just like H, X, whatever they are, right?
And yeah, and they'll be marked. Like, you know, so if you're looking at the plant tag, it would say like Hosta Montana, you know, with the name of the cultivar name, or H Montana with that cultivar name.
Okay.
So yeah, you'll be able to find them quite easily. And it's just, even just it's the plain green hosta that many of us have in our gardens.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. And another one, though, of course, daylilies. Have you eaten your daylilies?
Nope.
Because you can eat the flower, actually the entire plant of daylilies, not oriental lilies, not Asiatic lilies,
right.
Daylilies. So the entire plant is edible. And in fact, if you've ever divided your daylilies, you might notice they have these quirky little tubers on the roots. And those you can take off and eat like fingerling potatoes.
Really?
That's awesome. Yeah. They're actually having like kind of a nutty flavor. They're really good.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, and the petals, though, too. When you're generally, we eat our orange, like the ditch lilies, the day lilies.
Okay.
But I've eaten all of my day lilies, nibbled the flowers here and there. They don't have much of a flavor at all, the flower petals, but they're so pretty in salads.
Yeah, that would be a great addition to some salads.
For sure. Yes, Alice has written in and she's like, are you serious? Eating hosta stems? What? ?? So, yes.
Yeah, not the stems, but the shoots that come out of those sharp, funny little shoots. So we wait till they're about 6 inches tall.
Okay.
And just slice them off at soil level. Again, sort of like asparagus in the spring.
Right.
And okay. You can also roast them in the oven like you would, again, like asparagus. For like just probably 4 or 5 minutes on like 400 degrees until they start to, you know, get that little shrivelly roasted kind of look and brown a little bit. And then you can put a little salt on them and eat them.
Okay. And will the plants still come? Like, are you?
Yeah, we don't harvest. Like anything, if you're, I almost consider that a foraging plant.
Okay.
Really. So we would never take more than like a quarter or a third at 1 year.
Right.
And I mean, can you kill a hosta?
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah. Really.
Yeah. Definitely something to try, though.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
Tom writes in, hi, just tuned in. Will your guests come to my house and plant my garden? Huh? Only kidding. Just love her work. Thank you very much.
Oh, that's so sweet. Thank you so much. And I get asked that a lot. But, you know, honestly, I don't have time for my own garden.
Yeah.
Like my ornamental garden, I've been fighting goutweed for years. Also edible, but it tastes like hate, so you don't want to eat it. I think I finally got it managed. But it's this year I'm starting to rebuild my ornamental garden, so they're a bit of an embarrassment.
Oh.
So I could use some help myself.
Oh, there you go. Well, I was one of my questions was, do you have time for an ornamental garden?
Yeah, well, I'm in a deer superhighway as well, so my vegetable garden has an electric fence around it. So everything I plant outside that has to be deer resistant. So I do grow a lot of ornamental grasses.
Okay.
I find they don't bother my daylilies. I have some bamboos, like clumping, not running bamboos.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I have things like that. But I do love hydrangeas, but it's impossible with the deer. So
yeah.
I stick to things like rugosa roses and, again, ornamental grasses and cat mint, things that they won't touch.
Yes, yes. Anything scented, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Lavender, yeah, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
Really good tip. Anything scented, deer generally do not want to eat.
That's right. That's yep. right. So anything or with a texture like lamb's ears, which, you know, isn't super showy plant to begin with, but, you know, it's still planting it strategically if it's got a funny texture.
Exactly. Yeah. They definitely don't want to take a bite out of that.
Yes.
Or they'll take a bite and then they won't come back.
That's right. That's right. So what are you working on now? Are you inspired? You know, this time of year, you're probably too busy working in the garden to think about your next book or your next project.
I've already written the next book.
Ooh, exciting.
And I'm now in the editing phase. I'm supposed to be in the editing phase. I haven't don't tell my editor, but I haven't actually cracked the manuscript in about 2 weeks.
Okay.
This is also then the photography year for this next book. So I'm trying to manage the editing process with the 500 photos they want taken this year and having to grow everything for the photos and organize everything for the photos. So it's a delicate balance.
Yes, for
so
sure.
I'm trying to get that all done. But yes, I finished it back in January. And now, again, light editing. And then, so it won't come out for another year or so. But it's exciting, you know. And this is sort of like a build-on to my first book about, you know, year-round harvesting. So I think it's just another step up for people who want to learn to grow every day of the year, you know, and extend their seasons no matter what. So it should be fun.
Well, there you go. See, and I'd already said it was a great new show topic. So there you go. So are all these beautiful photos from your book, Veggie Garden Remix, from your garden?
I think 95% of them, if not more, are. And it was so fun to photograph because we had two photographers, one from New York and one from Halifax, and they would come up and they would turn my garage into a photo studio. It was amazing, my messy, embarrassing garage. And then the art director came, and, you know, she brought all these antique trays. And, you know, she went into my cupboards and pulled out all my old, ugly cookie sheets.
Because
she's like, these are gorgeous. And I'm like, what? Like, all the burnt stains on them. She thought that would really bring out, like, the vegetables. And I mean, she's a genius. And so we would say, okay, it's time to do the beans. It's time to do the cucumelons. And I would run up to the garden, harvest what we were about to photograph, come back. You know, we would set them up and take the photographs, and then we would eat them.
Oh, my goodness.
So it was so much fun. So everything, most things in the book did come from my garden. Because I had to grow so much in one time. Mm-hmm. There were a few neighbors, a few friends that grew things for us as well, just the overflow that I couldn't quite manage to fit in my garden.
Right, mm-hmm. right. Well, that's great. And oh my goodness. And how's growing all these varieties made you a better cook?
You know, people ask me, tell me all the time I need to do a cookbook. And I do love to cook. I cook all the time, but I don't think I'm cookbook-worthy material.
Okay.
But yeah, I mean, having all these fresh ingredients all the time, I mean, sometimes I'm just like, I can't believe we're eating such wonderful vegetables. You know, it's really awesome, and it's great to be able to share them with family and friends. And if we do grow too much of one thing, which doesn't happen too often because I tend to grow a lot of things.
Okay.
So it's more manageable. But if I do have a bumper crop one year, anything extra goes right to the food bank down the road.
Oh, wonderful.
They're always happy to get extra vegetables and herbs and things like
that. Yeah, so there's no wastage. Because I was going to say that, because sometimes people can do too big of a vegetable garden, especially initially, right, and not be able to handle the volume.
That's a really good point. When people say I'm starting my first one, the first thing I say is start small. Because I've had people say, I'm doing my first garden, I just rototilled it, it's 40 by 40. I'm like,
oh my gosh.
Big.
Yeah.
I usually say 4 by 8,
yes.
For a first garden. Maybe two of those. But,
yes.
You know, that's a lot for a first garden.
Yeah, so it is.
Start small.
Yes, start small. Start in containers, even if that's, you know, if you're just starting out, mm-hmm. it's okay to buy 3 or 4 really large containers.
Absolutely. And then just grow a handful of the things you like to eat
mm-hmm.
and have fun with it. You know, learn from, you know, your experiences. That's how I've learned most of my things, from making mistakes in the garden.
That's right.
Then you won't make them again.
That's right. Like planting mint in the garden. So if our listeners are just tuning in, we already covered that, but make sure you plant your mint in a container.
You could call my mother right now and she'll tell you what I did.
Yeah.
Sorry, Mom. Sure. I go everywhere. I just didn't know that mint spread like that.
Yes. Oh, it's unbelievable. So
it smells good though when you walk on it.
Yes. Yeah, it does. So Nikki, why don't you tell our listeners where they can find you?
Well, my books are in all bookstores, so they're pretty easy to find in stores, your independents, as well as online. And I am online at my website, savvygardening.com, as well as, of course, on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. And my handle on each of those is just at Nikki Jabor. I really love – I've really kind of embraced Instagram. I was kind of late to the game, but, I mean, for gardeners, mm-hmm. it's such a good platform to mm-hmm. see photos of other people's gardens and vegetables and what they're doing and get inspired. And so I do share a lot of pictures from my gardens and all the adventures I'm having.
Excellent, excellent. And you have your own radio show as well?
I do, every Sunday from 11 to 1 Atlantic time, 10 to noon Eastern time on News 95.7. And we do air our live online as well as on our local stations here and on the East Coast. And then we also have a lot of listeners throughout the U.S. who listen online. And then they tweet us throughout the show. So it's really fun to interact with everybody during the live shows on Twitter. And we can ask questions in real time and, you know, get answers from my guests and just learn something new every single week.
Oh, great. Well, that is excellent. Well, we love getting these emails from our listeners. We haven't evolved yet to Twitter, but we'll have to look into that. So that's good to know that people like communicating with you during the show.
Oh, it's so much fun. Yeah, we used to do a lot of call-in questions, and then it just evolved into Twitter, which is where most of our conversations take place now during the broadcast, and it's really fun. Yeah, people send photos every week. As soon as that, you know, 11 o'clock hour hits, we start getting, like, all these photos from people of their gardens, and it's so exciting.
Oh, that's great. And do they send you, like, little garden dilemmas?
Yeah, we get questions. We get pictures of insects and disease problems.
Ooh.
Or just, you know, what should I do here? But then we get lots of beautiful pictures and harvest pictures and kids gardening. And we just get comments, questions for the guests who are on that day. So it's just been a really fun way to kind of interact with everybody.
That is excellent. Yeah, that is really good.
Yeah. Very cool. I think we're all shaking our heads.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works well in our modern time of social media.
That's right. That's right. I know, I'm like, we're looking at all our questions. We had so many questions for you, but this has been great. And so that is good. So our listeners can find you, you know, anywhere.
Yep.
Let's talk a little bit. I, you know, want to give a shout out to savvygardening.com. So you blog there as well with two other ladies.
I do. Yeah. I belong to the Garden Communicator Organization. We used to be called the Garden Writers. And I've been a member for 20 years.
Oh,
I've
been
writing newspaper columns. And I was in Quebec City a couple years ago for the annual symposium, and I met these two women, one from Pittsburgh, one from Toronto, and we had so much fun spending our days together touring the gardens and at these, you know, like, educational sessions, and I was just like, we should do something together. And Savvy Gardening was born of that. So the three of us, Jessica Wallace from Pittsburgh, the horticulturist, the radio host, the best-selling award-winning author, Tara Nolan from Toronto, just outside in Dundas, she wrote Raised Bed Revolution, which has sold, I think, like 20,000 copies.
Yes.
It's an amazing book. And so, yeah, so the three of us, we have the site, we do it together, and it has been a blast, I have to say. It's my garden sisters, you know? We have so much fun with it.
Excellent, excellent. Yes, I follow all three of you as well, and I've met Tara at Canada Blooms a couple years ago.
So
I'm excited to get, and we talk, Matthew's like favorite thing is to talk about bugs and insects and stuff, so we definitely need to reach out to
Jessica.
We do, you know, and we've been really promoting, and I think the trend is, you know, in the fall not to clean up our gardens, and explaining to everybody why not to clean up their gardens, and it's a slow, depending on the generation of the gardener, right? It's a slow process to turn that around. I was just at a consultation this weekend, and the gentleman said, "Oh, we were looking at his side yard, but he said, can you come in the back? I think all my hydrangeas have died." And he literally cut them back to the ground. All of them, like the Annabelles, the Limelights, the, like every variety.
Every species.
And I'm like, and he just said, well, my neighbor told me to. And I'm like, and he goes, and I'm like, well, they're going to come back, but it's going to take a while, you know? And so.
A lot of bloom.
Yeah.
And Jessica's written several books, including Good Bug, Bad Bug, but then she won the American Horticultural Society Book Award for the book Attracting Beneficial Bugs to Your Garden, which has been my Bible, honestly, for transforming my food garden into this pollinator, beneficial insect-friendly food garden. So, yeah, she's very inspiring.
Oh, that's excellent, excellent. And that is something that everybody should think about is the pollinators for your vegetable. Well, for all your gardens, but, you know, planting a plant or two. And that has been a big, I think, also reason a lot of people are getting into gardening is because they want to plant for the bees and they want to plant for the butterflies. So, you know, that just reaps that extra benefit on your veggie garden.
Totally. And then you also have to be a little more mindful. So, you know, I get a lot of people tweeting me pictures of things. They're like, oh, my gosh, this guy's in my garden. What shall I do with it? And I look, and it's a ladybug larvae.
Yeah.
So you kind of want to become a little better educated, too, of what you're seeing in your gardens.
Right.
Sometimes you'll see these big caterpillars on your parsley. Those are swallowtail butterfly larvae.
Yes.
That's a good thing. I don't mind if they want to eat some of my parsley. I will share.
That's right.
So, you know, a lot of people still think, oh, I should reach for my soap, my insecticide soap bottle. There's bugs on my plants. But sometimes those bugs are good. And really 95% or more of the bugs in your garden are either beneficial or neutral. They're not doing anything. So
that's right.
We just have to have a different mindset about them.
Mm-hmm. And I've read, too, like if you don't have bugs in your garden, then you're doing something wrong.
I like that.
Right? Because it's not, because, you know, our gardens are living. Like, the soil's living. We need worms. We need those soil-bound insects.
Yep.
You know, we need things like that.
I was turning over one of my vegetable beds this afternoon. It was so nice outside. I'm like, I'm going to stop working and go up and work in the garden. And I turned over some soil, and there were, like, 10 worms, and I was so excited.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in my polytunnel, I get these, like, ground-dwelling wolf spiders or ground beetles from time to time I see. And I don't mind them at all because I know they're not going to bite me, but they're really good for keeping different types of pests down.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you just have to, I think, have a new mindset when it comes to insects.
That's right. That's right. Excellent. Excellent. Well, we're really excited. Thank you so much for joining us, Nikki. And we're really excited. We're going to do the little draw right now. Do you want to do the drum roll as our giveaway for Nikki's latest book, Veggie Garden Remix? So let's.
Is it Matthew? Is Matthew the winner? No, I know.
It is not. It is actually Olga.
Olga.
Oh, congratulations, Olga. I hope you like it.
Yeah, that is great. So, Gary, Olga, if you're hopefully you're still listening, Gary will send you an email and get your information. And our station manager here on Reality Radio, and we will get this book out to you. So we're really, thank you so much, Nikki. For inspiring all of us, you know, and so following you on social media, please, everybody, look her up. And we're looking forward to watching how your garden grows this season. And I'll definitely tweet you some pictures and Instagram you some pictures of my nasturtiums that I'm going to grow.
Yes.
I cannot wait. I'm going to hold you to that. I want to see Matthew's Phoenix nasturtiums.
There you go.
I'll send you some pictures.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah.
It's been a delight.
All right. Well, we'll talk soon.
Sounds good.
Take care, guys. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Wow, it's really got me inspired. How about you?
Oh, yeah. Yep. I just can't wait for those nasturtiums now. And there's so many fantastic things. If you haven't seen this book, you've got to get out there.
Yes.
And take a look. It is so inspiring. Yeah, I have.
Yeah, definitely. And think about it. So when you're at the Garden Center this May long weekend, yeah. All of us across Canada and the U.S., look for something unusual. Look for, you know, like she said, take your phone with you. Check out, you know, something unusual. See what it's growing. It is late to start seeds, but I'm sure there's lots of garden centers that are growing, you know, the black tomatoes, unusual varieties, the bush bean, you know, for container growers, look for the cherry tomatoes, like an unusual variety.
Dare to be inspired. Try something new. I'm growing indigo rose black cherry tomatoes.
Excellent.
Can't wait. It's exciting.
And last year you did the purple. Didn't you try different funky potatoes last year?
Yeah, and I'm going to do them again. Russian blue.
Okay.
Is the variety. And you cut them open and they are just rich, royal, juicy purple potatoes. And they're
very cool.
Super fun to make into mashed potatoes and have that lavender purple color on the plate. It's fantastic. Yeah, so go out there and do some really neat stuff. There's lots to grow, and Nikki's proof, living
yeah,
proof.
Yeah, for sure.
So much fun.
And even looking for those gourds, I think that would be fun, too. For sure. So we want to thank everybody for listening once again to us here at Down the Garden Path here on Reality Radio 101. Matthew?
Yeah, thank you, Mason, Olga, Ralph, Riley, Stan, Tom, and Alice for writing in questions for Nikki. Thanks again, Nikki, for joining us here on the show, Gary for producing it, and all the listeners who tuned in this evening. And we always enjoy bringing this show to you.
Yes, we do. And we will see you next week.
That's it. We will see you next week. And don't forget to like us on your favorite podcast provider. Catch up on past episodes.
That's right. Don't forget, we'll release the show as a podcast in the next week. So check us out, Down the Garden Path, on your favorite podcast app.
And thanks again for joining us here on Reality Radio 101, Down the Garden Path. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Down the Garden Path with your hosts, Joanne Shaw and Matthew Dressing, right here on Reality Radio 101.